You're listening to a resource from the Association of Certified Biblical Counselors, where we seek to promote excellence in biblical counseling. For more resources or to find out more information about ACBC, please visit us at biblicalcounseling.com.
Very good. Well, I'll pray for us and we'll get started. Father, thank you so much for your goodness and for your grace. The fact that we can even come together and just to hear encouraging word and to be equipped to counsel your word faithfully is very humbling. And the fact that we can even be used as instruments in your hands is a blessing. And so I just ask that during this time, even though we're talking about a lot of administrative things to some extent, that it would be a blessing. It would be an encouragement to see what you can accomplish through our ministries and our churches as we consider joining the larger movement of sufficiency and counseling for the church. We love you, Lord Jesus, and we pray this in your name. Amen. Well, so glad to see you all. My name is Sam Stevens. I serve on staff as the Director of Training Center Certification. So many people don't know that we actually certify two different groups. We obviously certify individual members. You guys saw nearly 200 of them walk yesterday, which was a huge blessing. But we also certify churches, schools, and counseling centers across the world. Right now, we've got 82 training centers. 29 states are covered, so we've got some work to do. Maybe some of you guys will be the next ones. And then we have five countries that we just had approved for our certified training centers. So we've got Chile, Mexico, Argentina, Ecuador, South Africa. I've got a conversation with some folks in Kenya going on right now and in Europe too. So the Lord has just been so good to ACBC and seeing what it's going to look like to expand into different cultures and different languages. So just a blessing that way as well. A lot of this talk is going to focus on just the process, the training center certification process. It is a rigorous process, but attainable. And that's what we say for the individual certification as well. It is rigorous, but attainable. So I don't want you to leave. This is what I don't want to happen. I don't want you to leave today and go, oh, it's just too much work, and we'll never do that. I am your advocate. I am the one that answers all the questions. I want to be for you. So even after this very general talk, and I'm talking to several people, let's schedule a meeting. When COVID hit, nothing really impacted me because I was on Zoom all the time anyway. So I should have owned stock in it, honestly. But I like to do it, you know, face to face, on the phone. However, we need to do that to answer questions. I think it's very wise for many of you now. You may not be in a place where it might not be realistic for the next year, maybe even 2 years, for you guys to be a certified training center. That does not mean you're here too early. It's actually great that you're here right now. What I advocate for is let's get all of our ducks in a row now and begin working towards getting ready for application. So anyway, don't be discouraged if it's a lot of information. I will also, I'm not going to worry about a projector or anything. I will give you this presentation afterwards. I've got your emails, so don't worry about furiously writing down notes, okay? I'm known for packing a lot in a very short time, so we're going to do that today. There are a lot of benefits to pursuing training center status. The way that I like to think about ACBC is not the home office. We have 8 full-time staff members, and we're in Kansas City in a little hallway. That's our home office, nothing fancy. But ACBC is our training centers. They're the front lines, I think, of the biblical counseling movement. ACBC is a leader in the movement, and we have been since our inception and Jay's founding, and we continue to do that. And when our vast majority of trainees and members, when they've interfaced with ACBC, it's not been me, and it's not been our staff members. It's been potentially you guys. And so as our fellows are very much the quality gatekeepers of the organization, our training centers are the front lines and represent ACBC. So you'll be a vital part of advancing the mission and cause of biblical counseling across the world. You'll join a network of like-minded believers. We've got training centers that we've got some areas in the country where there's a pretty strong collection of centers. We've got many that are far and away from others. But I work pretty diligently bringing everyone together frequently to dialogue with each other, to encourage one another, to be about the important work of what we do in training and certifying counselors. So you'll be part of that family. I'm committed to keeping you in the loop. I'm only the second full-time director of training center certification in ACBC's history. My predecessor, who was also full-time, was only here for 11 months. And the Wayne Johnston, for any of you from Southern California who know Wayne, he filled this role part-time for about 10 years. But when I joined on staff in 2019, and I began to call and introduce myself to our directors, many of our centers said, this is the first phone call I've had from ACBC home office in 15 years. Now I'm bothering to like, please leave me alone. It's not going to happen. We are going to keep, we brought them in, we communicate, we meet often, and they're part of the family. And I want them to feel that way. They don't need to feel isolated and alone. They are the front lines of ACBC, and our job is to support the work that they're doing. ACBC also promotes you. Our website's not about ACBC. It's about our training centers. It's about who ACBC really is. And so we have millions of visits on our website every year, hundreds of thousands every month. People are coming to our site. My job is to narrow the gap between people looking for quality training and you guys offering quality training. And so certified training centers have a unique platform on our website that other ministries do not have. And we highlight them and push them because that's part of the process. And then also a big part of what we're doing in this realm and in our certified training centers is always seeking to improve the quality. When people ask me, what's the value of certification? Well, who cares? Why be certified? I'm often known for my philosophy of life is why use 5 words when 20 will work just fine. But I've narrowed it down to 1 word. It takes a lot of work for me. The 1 word is confidence. People, when I refer someone to an ACBC member, I am confident that that's going to be a quality counselor who deeply believes convictionally the sufficiency of Scripture and has skills needed to truly help them, to lead them home. And that's part of what our network does. And so I like to see that happen. That's really important. And so in keeping up with all of our training centers, I know all of the men and women who lead our centers. I know a lot of their instructors that are there. And I know that what they offer is quality. It's solid. And so we want to see that process maintained throughout all 3 phases. And when people graduate, like many who did yesterday, each and every one of those men and women, quality counselors. It'll continue to grow in their skills in the coming years. So those are just some benefits to pursuing training center status. There are 6 different phases of the process, and I'm going to walk through each of those in a little bit of detail. Okay, so the first phase is what we call the pre-application assessment. So even before a center can apply, they have to meet with me. This is a little bit different than our individual certification process. Individuals can just submit applications to us, begin the process themselves from their computer. That's not the way that certified training centers begin their journey, or prospective centers begin their journey. I get to know them. I meet with church staff. I talk with them a lot and get to know who they are. We often like to get some fellows involved to see that they know what's going on at that church or that center before we can even apply. And there are certain thresholds that every applicant has to meet before I even release an application to you. So I hope that shows even at the beginning the importance of the high standards that we have in that way. The second phase is application. I'll walk through that in a minute. The third phase is evaluation. Phase 4 is a report is compiled and given to a committee of the board to review. The board will then do a final vote in phase 5. And then phase six is an orientation and onboarding. So by phase 6, you're already a certified training center. So phases 1 to 6 is very specific process. So let me walk through each of those just briefly, give you kind of an idea of what that looks like. I want to actually offer a good time of Q&A so you guys can ask specific questions to me. I think that'll be most helpful. So what is the pre-application assessment? Every center, and this is easy, it's not 20 things, every center has to meet 4 items in order to be able to apply. 1, the center must be organized with and subscribe to ACBC guiding documents. When I say the guiding documents, I'm referring to our standards of conduct, standards of doctrine, statements from the board, and our constitution and bylaws. So organized with and subscribing to ACBC guiding documents. The short of it is whether it's a church, a higher learning institution, or a counseling center, you have to be where we are philosophically and in practice. Okay, we're not going to certify integrationists. we're not doing that. You got to be where we are, and be in line with where ACBC wants to go. The way this will look too for counseling centers or training centers in churches is I want to know that the elders of that church, the pastor of that church, is in agreement with us. They want to partner with us. This is a formal affiliation. Now, ACBC is about the local church. We do not mandate that local churches do anything. Okay, that's inappropriate. But there's a formal association here. When you become a certified training center, you represent us and we represent you, and we want to make sure that that's done rightly. So there are no secrets. There's no hidden agenda here. Everything's out in the open, okay? So that's a necessity number one. You've got to be subscribing to where we are philosophically, standards of conduct, standards of doctrine. Your church, your center is not going to have licensed professional counselors. It's not going to be operating in a clinical way. Nah, we're not doing that, okay? Got to be where we are. Number two, you must show a responsibility and a working relationship with a recognized ecclesiastical authority. ACBC is not a Baptist organization. It's not a Presbyterian organization, but it is an Orthodox evangelical organization. So our standards of doctrine and conduct are broad, but they're also narrow. Okay. In other words, there is a place where you need to be, but what we always lift up is the local church. So that's why we use ecclesiastical authority loosely. Some of our Presbyterian brethren like that. That terminology is more helpful. So that's what we use. What does this look like? Of our 82 centers, roughly 60 of them are local churches. So vast majority of our centers are just faithful churches that have counseling ministries that are also certified training centers. And I love it. And that's probably the easiest example of what that looks like. The center operates as a ministry of the church. The elders and shepherds of the church are on board and have approved that. That's a ministry of their church. They're on board with it. And the center is is under the authority of those elders. There has to be some sort of authority structure over the center. So a director, most of the time, the way this looks for a lot of ours is the director may be a staff member or one of the pastors on staff at a church, but there is a reporting process. There's a way of accountability. There's a way of accountability for the center to the local church. If it's a counseling ministry, we've got, I think, 15 to 20 of our centers are kind of parachurch ministries. We still want to see local church involvement. So the way this can look is somewhat broad. We've got a few centers that have partnering churches that support them. Most of these are organized as 501c3s. And so they have a board of directors. They have some sort of authority that oversees them that, again, is connected to either denominations or local churches in the area that provide doctrinal guidance and that type of thing. That's what we're looking for. We don't want a center that's just out there disconnected from the local church. That goes against our whole philosophy, okay? So I'm looking for that authority. And then if it's a school, about 15 of our centers are schools, the Master's University, Reformed Presbyterian Theological Seminary, Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. We've got many, many, many. All of them are either denominational institutions or some other connection to local church ministries as well. So we have to have that ecclesiastical connection that's necessary. That's point two. The other two points are fairly simple. Point three, you have to do counseling. Okay. It shocked me. Got to do counseling. You may be shocked to find when I came on staff, about 15 of our counseling centers were not offering counseling. Mm-hmm. That was our fault. We weren't doing our due diligence. They're counseling now, or they're no longer with us. So you got to be counseling. We practice what we preach. We don't just talk about theory. We go about doing it. We believe it. And that's really important that we are about that work. So you're counseling, and then you offer quality training. You have to be working in some facet of preparing other people, equipping other believers to also do the work of ministry. Now, let me give you some caveats as to what this looks like, perhaps at your center, especially regarding the training. This has been a kind of a point of confusion, so let me clarify this. At your center, for each of these things, you have to have been doing these things for at least 2 years before you apply with us. So subscribing to our doctrinal statements, showing a connection with ecclesiastical authority, counseling, and training for 2 years minimally before we can even have a conversation about application. So that's why many of you, or maybe you're just now starting a counseling ministry. Hey, I'm glad you're here. We can prepare you now to get ready for application in 2 years. But that keeps us from having just complete novices join our group. We want to see some time-tested equipping and that type of thing going on. Here's the catch about training. We don't technically require that centers offer what we call the fundamentals training course. The fundamentals training course, how many of you are members? Okay, most of you. Okay, great. The fundamentals training course has been referred to as the 30 hours training, okay? It's kind of a misnomer. It minimally has to be 30 hours. It can be much more than that. You don't technically have to be offering the 30 hours training for 2 years before you apply. At the same time, when you submit your materials, what you submit has to be the 30 hours. So that's just kind of the conundrum that I find myself in. I have to work around it. So here's my suggestion to you all. You can technically apply if you've been doing any type of biblical counseling training. Some churches have applied and they said, hey, we've been giving this marriage and family seminar, once or twice a year for 2 years. Does that count? Absolutely, that counts. Sure. Or we've been doing some key element stuff, like just very basic. Now, how do you listen well? How do you collect information? We do that for 2 years. We do summer intensives. Does that count? Absolutely, that counts. But the catch is you can't get into application phase unless you've got the fundamentals. There's nothing for me to evaluate. So let's move beyond technicality. I want to help you be as prepared as possible. I don't want you to enter the pipeline. That's what I call it. I don't want you to enter the pipeline unless we're ready to move. So how do you get set up well to do that? I would recommend you right now become familiar with our fundamentals training course, all the approved topics. I can supply to each of you a copy of our Certified Training Center manual that outlines all the approved topics. We also even include learning objectives that need to be covered for each of those. So it's basically a pre-written curriculum. It's a guide anyway. Your responsibility is to take that and to formulate it into a course that fits well in your context. We have 82 centers, and we've got about 82 ways that the fundamentals training course is offered. So people always ask me, what's the best way? How do most people? I don't even know how to answer that question. Some people do week-long intensive. Some people do 52 weeks. Some people do 6 weeks. Some people do once every 3 months. But here's the beauty of the training center model. You guys are doing the training where you are. You know your people. You know what works for them. You can adapt it to whatever you want. So there's a lot of freedom and flexibility on how you do that. I think what I would recommend you do is create the curriculum, put it together, decide how you want to offer it. And by the way, you can always change that later. You're not married to that. And then I would take a small group of individuals in your church that you think are already committed to biblical counseling. Maybe they're even initially interested in it. Take them through a couple dry runs, if you will, through your first runs through your curriculum, and have them give you detailed feedback on everything: presentation, classroom time, content. Was it too much? Did I include additional assignments? I mean, you ask them anything you can do, and then you can change and adapt your curriculum, make it even stronger for application. I've suggested that every single center I've suggested that has done that has been very thankful to me that they've done that. Here's how this works, because I always get this question. Well, if we do that, we're not a certified training center yet. If we do that and we become certified, can that count for those people? The question is maybe. Okay. We do grandfather in individuals who do go through courses like that before you're technically certified if there's little to no change through your curriculum by the time you offer it until when you submit it and it's approved. Okay, so we kind of have that conversation after you get through the process and are approved as a certified training center. What I would recommend you do is don't tell anybody, don't promise them, yeah, this will count, you can be certified, because you don't know that. But tell them, listen, whether or not this counts, you can be a vital part in helping us achieve this goal. And I think it is a vital, I think it's a really key thing. So, and perhaps it will count. If not, you can go through it again and be blessed again, and maybe don't charge them for it or something. I don't know. Give them a basket of candy. I don't know. But I find that people who do that, it's very helpful. But that's how it works. There have been many centers where there's been slight changes, and for the most part, nothing major. And I'm like, we'll be glad to grandfather those individuals in and count it for them. So as just a thank you. So Anyway, those are some things that you have to do for pre-application. Let me pause there. What are some questions you've got about just that part? We haven't even gotten to the application yet. Yeah, yes, sir.
Is there like a minimum number of people training or like one-to-one?
One-to-one, 1-to-50, whatever you want to do.
Does it have to be a member that teaches that?
So that's a great question. Right now, as of today, roughly 67% of the core fundamentals training has to be taught by a certified member. That's changing in 2023. It'll be 100%. So in 2023, and so when I say core, let's say the 30 hours. The 30 hours that's mandated by the board has to be taught by a certified member in 2023, 100%. If you guys decide you want to offer a 70-hour fundamentals training, the additional hours can be taught by non-members. But the core training, what the board says has to be taught minimally, will have to be taught by a certified member in 2023 moving forward. Right now, it's roughly 67%. Oh, there's a question back here.
What if we're using another training center's material?
That's a good question. In the manual, there's no way, I wish I had a magic ruler, it'd make my life a lot easier, that said, this is it. We ask that 50%, and this is just a number that we got from the board, so I'm not making it up, but 50% of the content is original to you. Let me speak to that. That's a good question. The spirit behind this, so there's the law behind things like that, and then there's the spirit behind it. The spirit's more important to me. What I'm looking for is that you're not just copying and pasting from some other center. I don't think that represents good teaching generally. I don't think it represents good quality in biblical counseling training. Now, are there things that John Street has said that I could never improve on? Yes, plenty. So there are things that you can use. Stuart Scott, many of our counseling and trainers use their stuff, give them credit. So there's appropriate use. We don't plagiarize. Okay, I don't know if you're Baptist people, you know, talking about. Don't plagiarize. We do want to see a unique fingerprint on what you bring to the table. I don't know about you guys, but when it comes to counseling, there are a lot of great homework tools, and I've used a lot of those things. Wayne Mack has been so helpful to me. But the most powerful homework, I think the most potent homework I've ever given, is stuff that I have given from my own study of the scriptures. And I think the same applies to education and training as well. So we're looking for roughly 50% of the content that's unique to your own study of the scriptures that meet the minimum standards. Yes, sir.
What about an organization like Launch or, you know, some of their training materials?
No, you can't. I mean, they're already a certified, you're talking about the Low Country Biblical Counseling Center? Yeah, so they're already a training center doing that. If you agreed, you could offer that, but that would be through their training center. If you want your own training center, you got to have your own curriculum. And we're reviewing your own curriculum. Yeah.
Does the person or team that is going to be either doing the pre-assessment process?
I'm the team. I do everything.
I'm Stuart, but I'm talking about the people who would be basically,
helping you.
Center. Yeah. Training center. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you said that they need to be ACBC members. It's kind of what I heard. They're at least teaching it. What about the people who are doing the administrative work?
The administrative person. Okay.
So in other words, the main thing I'm trying to think about, do they have to have a seminary degree?
No. The only instructor qualification that we need when you guys become certified would be the instructors are certified members, with us. Yeah. Yes.
What's the form by which you evaluate?
We'll do that in a second. That's a great question. We'll go ahead and move on. We'll actually move on to that part now. So the application, once you meet all of those minimum standards, and we've had several conversations, I've gotten to know you. This is a very personal process. So I wasn't trying to jump the gum. I wanted to make a point. There is no team that I outsource this to. I do everything. I've got one intern that helps me review things, but it's very personal to me. I'm not saying that as a complaint. I love what I do. I get to know you. You're not a paper. It's just like counseling. I always tell my counselees, the PDI has been so helpful. Thank you. But you're not your PDI, and you're not your application either. So before you even get the application, I have a pretty good sense that you are one of us. You know what I'm saying? Like we're together in this. We're going to make this work. It's workable. I try not to even release applications for centers that I think it's just not going to work. I mean, I don't want to waste your time. I don't want to waste my time either. I don't always know what the board's going to do. I'm not the board, but I try to have a good sense of that. So when it comes to releasing the application, that's all a digital application. So there's no paper. I've gone paperless. I will send you a link to an online form through our website. And it's going to be, it's available to you for 30 days. Pardon me. When you access it the first time, I give you a code. you'll be able to go in and out and work on it for 30 days. After that 30-day window, it disappears. That's just how the process works. The technology we have, but it can easily be done much, much sooner than 30 days. I've never had anyone that timed out of that. The application has several different components. It's not a multiple choice document. I need details and data from you. So here are just some things that the application will include. Detailed information about the history of your center. Where'd you come from? How did it come to be? How'd you come to be affiliated with ACBC or desire to partner with us? Things like that. Connection to your church authority structures. How do you report to people that oversee and are responsible for the doctrinal integrity of your ministry? What's that look like? Who are these people? I need their phone numbers, emails, because I interview all of them. We want to know what those connections look like. How is it set up? Financial health. We don't ask for specifics. You don't have to give us your data sheet or anything like that. But, you know, if you're under some sort of financial audit or there's some legal concerns, we need to be aware of that. So I ask for some of that information. Philosophy and methods of instruction. How do you foresee you'll be teaching and instructing? Does your center have some churches have kind of a philosophy of those types of things. What does that look like? What are you drawing from? Understanding of sufficiency, stuff like that. Are you planning to be pretty didactic? If not, how are you going to translate the material to people that are coming to you? Or what's that going to look like? Those are pretty important. And then the profile of your center's counselors and instructors. So everyone who counsels at your center, certified or not, I want to know who they are. Everyone who's teaching the fundamentals, certified or not, I want to know who they are as well. Most of our centers, it's just one person, but we've got larger ones that have a team of people that cover the fundamentals. So it'll be information like that. There'll also be opportunities in the application to upload the curriculum for your fundamentals training course. I want to speak about this, it's very important. The curriculum is not student notes with blanks. Okay, it's not helpful. I can't evaluate that. What I'm looking for is detailed teaching notes. For some people, they like to manuscript out their teaching and it's pretty detailed and they'll submit that to me. That's great. For some, like me, I would actually probably submit a PowerPoint. I've got notes. I've got stuff that I can see. But what I'm looking for is, what are you providing for the people that you're teaching? I go through every single lecture. I go through every single page. I had one center. This is not typical, and please don't do this to me. It was 800 pages. And I went through every single page. It's important. I do it. Took me a long time. Missed some lunch breaks, but I got it done. And you don't have to do that. They have a lot going on at their center, but whew, I was like, all right. Have to get new eyeballs. But that curriculum is detailed. So that's the point. I don't need an outline that's just a skeleton. I need notes. What are you teaching? What are you translating from the lectern to the students? That's what you're going to be submitting to me. And that has to at least cover the fundamentals. Okay. You can give me all that you want and do that, because I think it's helpful to give to the board and say, this center wants to go beyond the 30 hours. They've got stuff on domestic violence, they've got stuff on this, and they're going to include all that in their fundamentals. The board loves that. But they also won't say no if you're going to say, no, we're going to stick to fundamentals and we're going to do advanced stuff later. That's fine too. So I want as much as I can from that. I'll need an official letter of recommendation from your ecclesiastical authority. So this would be a letter from the elders of your church, the letter from your senior pastor, the letter from a board of directors, an official letterhead that says, basically, we love ACBC and we want this to work out. Okay, something more official, but like that. And we include that in the application. A headshot from you, a logo of your center if it's applicable. Something else that I require as well is we request at least 4 lectures that are either recorded video and audio or just audio. So this is where teaching through the fundamentals becomes necessary again. I don't just want to read the information on paper. I want to hear you teach. So if you want to set up a camera in the back, and I don't need all of it. I just need 4 lectures. I actually ask for 2 that are more methodologically driven. Key Elements works pretty great for that. And then 2 that are more theory driven. You know, view of secular philosophies of counseling or something like that. And so I'll send you a OneDrive link. You upload it and we're good to go. So I listen and watch you. I read through all the curriculum, make sure all those little boxes are checked. And that leads us to the evaluation. And there is an application fee of $500. It's non-refundable, one-time fee of $500. Okay. All right. I'll move into the evaluation, and I'll ask for more questions for both of these. So it's detailed because we evaluate quite a bit, as you could tell. I'm doing multiple things. I'm looking to make sure you've met the minimum requirement. I'm making sure that everything's in line with us doctrinally, both for standards of conduct and doctrine. I'm looking to provide you feedback, if I have any to offer, on ways that I think you can maybe improve the time that you have. I'll give you an example. I had one center. It was one of my first ones that I've ever evaluated, Sweet Church in Indiana. And curriculum was great. Everything was solid. I mean, no problem. And then I listened to the audio and I watched the video. And it wasn't bad, but in a 45 minute to an hour setting, there was like 30, 40 minutes of just kind of shooting the breeze and then a really quick trying to cover the material. And so that was really important for me to see. Why is that? Because I'm really, we've got a limited amount of time. That doesn't fit to the spirit of the 30 hours of instruction. Well, we did in 30 hours. Yeah, but half those hours were you guys just kind of shooting the breeze or just talking about something that's peripherally related but not covering material. You've got to use that time to equip your people, okay? So I was able to give some feedback that I wouldn't have been able to do if he had not submitted that information to me. Like, I love that you have time for Q&A. I think there may be a better place for you to fit that. Have you thought about doing this? Some of our centers do this. And maximize the actual class time for translating content. And he was like, oh, it's a great idea. I just didn't realize. And it was all good. So what I do after the evaluation time, I have another meeting with you and I sit down and we review all of my notes. I write detailed notes. I'm very organized. This is what I do. I have detailed notes on all your curriculum and I kind of talk back and forth. Hey, I read this. What do you mean by that? I didn't understand that because I'm the one that gets to sit in front of the committee and the board representing you. You're welcome. And I want to make sure that I do that well. I don't want to misrepresent you. So I clarify questions. I get some more details. And then I try to provide some helpful feedback on some stuff that I noticed from the audio or the video recording stuff. So we have, I think it's a helpful time. And if there's anything that you need to shore up, we do all that then. So all that's being evaluated, counseling practices, all that type of stuff. So it culminates in that interview between you and I in order for us to make sure all of our I's are dotted and our T's are crossed, okay, and we can move forward. Any questions about application or evaluation? Yes, sir.
This might go back a little bit further. So I'm thinking of an out-of-country setting, indigenous, so the 50% in indigenous leadership or instructors, how many instructors can be foreign or like coming in for a couple weeks doing things?
Yeah.
How do we, it's going to take a while to raise up.
Sure.
Indigenous instructors.
Yeah. So there's several parts to that question. I'll take that in two different ways. First off, if they're coming in maybe to your center or maybe you're going to them to do instruction and it's happening in English, that's a lot easier because obviously the whole system is in English right now. We also have it in Spanish, but no other languages right now. You still need to meet the instructional requirements. So even if you partner with another church, you're a certified training center, maybe you have a church in a nearby city or something that wants to host you guys, you can do on the road trainings. You don't have to do all your physical on-site training at your physical location. However, if you do that, you are still the training center. You're responsible for making sure the curriculum meets instructional quality. You meet the minimum standards for all that type of stuff. So you can have, you can bring in other instructors if you want. You just got to make sure that you meet those minimum requirements for the instructional, requirements, right? That they're members or that kind of stuff. If it's in a different language, well, we don't have the capacity for that now. Yet, we're working on it. Other question about application or evaluation? Yes, sir.
So, for example, our context, you have College Biblical Studies down in Houston. We're an hour north of Houston. And then you have Dr. Keith Palmer up in Dallas. Do you have a geographical, like there's too many training centers in one area, or is it just even the practicality of can you have enough training, too many training centers in one area? Yeah. Just
We can have as many training centers in Houston as we can do. I mean, Houston is totally untapped. So if you're in Houston, let's talk. Mm-hmm. We need more in Houston for sure. I think we want to have as many. There was like an unspoken rule. I don't know about it. I kind of ignore it, to be honest with you. 50 miles, but I think that's the way of the dinosaur, honestly. We need as many. Houston is totally untapped. That's the only training center we have in Houston. I just don't understand that. So let's talk. Okay. I'm totally on board with that. Yeah. Yes.
So is RTS Charlotte a training
center? It is, yes.
I'm so sorry.
No, that's great.
The 30 hours, that is essentially what the church itself has to formulate. Mm-hmm. The training itself has to be formulated by them. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Okay.
By the applying church or center, yeah.
Okay.
Yep. But I do provide, we can provide to you all those topics plus the learning objectives. So we've got the learning objectives are fairly new, not new in the sense that we've never in our 40 plus year history, all we had were a list of topics. But we found out pretty early on, we've got 82 centers across the country. Well, okay, so the topic is on the role of the husband. Okay, that could look like 40 different things. I mean, it's all good stuff. But what we found is people going into exams and then supervised counseling, there was no standardization. It was not good. So the learning objectives are an opportunity to try to get a level, not, I wouldn't say playing field, but standards across the board. We know that when people enter phase 2 and 3, they have at least minimally encountered this information. So I provide that to you, to every applicant, and that's a super helpful starting point for putting the curriculum together. And I'm also available to help think through things too. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Is there a requirement for online versus in person?
Nope.
So we could have all 100% online?
You could have 100% online. I just announced this to our directors. We've got the three main modes of training right now are on-site, online, scheduled. So there's a beginning, there's like an actual course, but it's offered at a particular time. And then on-demand courses. Several of our centers offer on-demand, and any trainee can start at any point of the year whenever they want. It just rotates. But obviously to us, it's very important that if you do virtual, it's not cheap. Okay, not saying you gotta put hundreds of thousands of dollars in it. That's not what I'm saying. But it needs to be done well. I've seen it where it's not done well, like wrinkled sheets as your background. Don't do that.
Interesting comment. You said you give credit to the people that are your mentors, teachers, so on.
Yes,
that actually provide kind of like content, the backbone or framework for what you teach. And at the same time, you have to come up with 50% that is unique to you.
Mm-hmm.
So could you elaborate
a
little bit on
that? Yeah, it's kind of like writing a paper in school, a research paper. What you're doing is synthesis, okay? That's why there's not a magic ruler. I can't say, okay, sessions 1 through, topics 1 through 17, that's all from John Street, and then this is all from him. What you're doing is you're bringing all this information together, and it's, you're meeting minimum standards, so there's some things that you're covering, but the unique perspective that you're coming from and your study of the scriptures, that needs to be, that unique fingerprint needs to be seen. I want to see that. I want to see it's something that you've explored, you brought in. So how you use what Dr. Street has given is going to be very unique to you. That's, as far as I'm concerned, that's part of your original contribution.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Also the method, like, for example, you said PowerPoint, whatever method you use to present that becomes your individual fingerprint, just like no two people preach the same.
Right. Yeah. And that's great. I don't have particular, he put too much on that PowerPoint. He's out. It's not like that. But I want that to be unique to you. You're going to have learning styles. I mean, there are going to be some things generally I'm looking at, but I use most of that as just a conversation piece. That's never a deal breaker. The original contribution is, at the end of the day, I'm looking that you didn't just copy and paste and throw stuff in there haphazardly. It's a real choppy puzzle, but that you actually synthesize, you're talking about this and you're building off of this passage, and you have an illustration from Stuart Scott. And Stuart, I mean, man, who can improve upon what Stuart's done, right? But you know it and you're expounding on it. That's what I'm looking for. It's the spirit behind it I'm looking for. Yeah. Yes.
So we've been talking a lot about the teaching training component. What about the observation, supervision pieces?
Yeah, that's. I'm glad you brought that up. The misnomer for many people for a while was that training centers were phase one and done. But that's not what we're going for. We want to see every training center as kind of a microcosm of the entire certification process. The goal would be, and we're not there right now, but we want to be there, is that if a trainee comes to your center, they don't have to go anywhere else. That they can go through phase one, phase two, and phase three and become a certified member. I would love to see that happen. I think you're going to see some quality definitely improve, standardization across the board improve. So what we mandate, what we require is that every center is paired up with a supervising fellow. So one of our fellows will kind of be paired with your center. I'll tell you, if you want to know what the gold platinum star looks like, the platinum, I don't rank my centers, although maybe I do sometimes, I don't know. But the gold standard would be that the director of the center is also the supervising fellow. They don't have to be. If you're the director, you do have to be a certified member. Okay, that's not written anywhere, but I'm not going to give you an application if you're not certified. It's just not going to happen. Okay, but if you're a fellow, I'll just tell you virtually the board will. I mean, I can't tell you they'll just pass you, but it looks good. Okay, if you have a relationship with a fellow, that's equally important. If you don't have any, if you don't know any of our fellows, it's not necessary that you do. It will be very helpful to you if you do have a relationship with them. If you don't know any of them, I would encourage you to reach out to our office and say, I would like to do this. And at this point, I want to get to know a fellow and have them kind of give me some tips. And I want to get to meet them, maybe even have them over to my church. If a fellow can offer a recommendation to your application, I don't foresee it not being approved. Okay, because fellows are highly trusted members of ACBC. They have to go through, you talk about rigorous approval process. So. You know, multiple ways that's done. But if you have a fellow, this is the beautiful thing about the complete package. If you're a director or maybe one of your instructors is a fellow, you have everything you need to do everything. You guys can offer courses to help them prepare for exams. We've got graders that will help grade the exams. That's pretty easy to do, get them paired with the grader. And then if they're ready to be supervised, they could request you or one of your instructors. And I think the quality experience would just be that much more if they could do that from someone who actually had a hand in teaching them the fundamentals. But you do have to have, before you're ready to go, you do have to have a fellow supervisor. So what it's looked like for many of our centers is I just find a fellow who's available. I make introductions. And the way that looks is they don't have any say in the day-to-day running. You still are the director. You run the center. You're responsible for renewals and all that kind of stuff. But the fellow is there as a resource. And then every year annually, they do have to sign off on your report to me. You have to do an annual report to me on accounting for what you've done in the year, basically. And if they don't sign off on it, you don't get renewed. Or we have to have a conversation about renewal. Yeah. So, all right. Well, we're gonna truck on. When does this end? 1:30? Oh, okay. I got to go. I got to roll. Phase four. So this is going to be pretty easy. This is not anything too, because at this point we're kind of rolling. After phase three happens and everything looks great and I'm good to go with what we have, I put all of your information into a nice tidy report for the training center committee of the board. That's Steve Viers, Nathan Curry, Dale Johnson, and Ron Alchin, and myself. But I'm just there. They're our training center committee. They review all of you, and they ask me tons of questions about you. Character, content, church situation, whatever they want to ask me, and I've got to answer their questions. So it's like a little gunfight. And we do all that, and they can do one of three things. They can recommend you to the full board for a vote of approval. They can ask me to get more information, or they can deny your application. Any of those can happen at that level. I don't think... I may have had one denial at that level that I've ever done. I've onboarded 25 centers or something like that. A lot. I've only had one, and I wasn't totally shocked, but I tried not to get you to that point unless I'm pretty confident they're going to be like, this is good. So I've had a few times where they've asked me to get some more information to clarify something, and I've done it. It's pretty easy to do. Once they vote to approve you to the board, you go to phase five automatically. There's nothing for you to do at this point. At the next board meeting, the board meets quarterly, three times a year, and once a year during the annual conference. There's four entry points a year that you can become a certified training center. There used to be just one. We only onboarded new centers in October, but that's kind of lame. I mean, if you submit everything in February, you got to wait. I was like, no, we're not doing that. They meet quarterly. So the nearest member, the nearest board meeting that I can get to, I'll put your application on the agenda. They'll do the same thing, but larger. And if they vote to approve you, at that moment, you are a certified training center of ACBC. Okay? And so the board has to do a full vote, and it's a two-thirds majority vote in order to be voted on as a certified training center. And then after that, I meet with the new directors, and we do an onboarding time where I get you credentials to the website. All of you that are members have access to your individual membership account. You'll be given access to a special certified training center dashboard through the website that gives you administrative access, opportunities to upload events. You can qualify for CEUs and offer CEUs at your center and get a lot of other documents that I send you throughout the year to read that you love to read. So all those resources are there.
I heard a question
that's
coming up about CEUs, whether that's going to be continuing or whether they're going to dismiss it or do something.
No, it's the law of the land. The vote passed and January the 1st, CEUs is reality. Okay. Mm-hmm. I could talk about that in a second too. Let me finish up this part and I'll be glad to ask. We got a few minutes for any other questions. This is not like the Supreme Court. It's not a lifetime appointment, okay? You have to renew annually, just like you do as a member. So you'll be doing your membership renewals and all that's involved. And now as a member, you'll have to have CEUs every 2 years and all that kind of stuff. So you do that. You'll also have to do several things to maintain your certified status every year. Here's what this looks like, that you're offering training programs that are designed to meet the minimum requirements to membership. Typically, I'm looking for that you're doing fundamentals, but ideally, we want things that are shepherding people through the whole process, that you're meeting all the other aspects. The content remains your guys, that your coursework's unique to you. This is another thing that you have to meet. 50% of the content for fundamentals has to be taught by a ACBC counselor who's a man. That's what the board has approved. There are no clarifying standards besides that. So that's up to you. 50% has to be taught by a counselor who's a man. And then you have to complete the annual renewal process. The renewal process includes the payment of dues. You have to keep track of all of your enrollment every year. So everyone who registers for everything that you do, they take a fundamentals course. If you offer any advanced training, you're going to log all that. And that's all going to be a digital process through reporting to me every year. Your fellow has to approve it. You have to pay your dues and all that type of stuff every year. There's a 3 tiers of dues. The least amount every center will pay will be $150 a year. The most a center will pay is $750 a year. That's dependent on how many individuals you have enrolled in your fundamentals training course every calendar year. Okay, so if you offer an advanced training course and 2,000 people take that course, none of that counts towards what your dues will be. Your dues are fundamentals. Okay. That's how we adjudicate that right now. That could change. That's up to the director's approval. So, all right. Questions? Covered a lot of ground. That's from beginning to end. That's the whole process. So, yeah.
Are there going to be any CEUs for the training centers?
Yes. So training centers, our vision would be our training centers will be the primary places CEUs are offered. Training centers are not mandated to offer any continuing education unit courses, but I highly encourage that they do that. Many of our centers already offer advanced training that builds off the fundamentals, and that is like low-hanging fruit for continuing education.
So the question I was asked.
Oh, yes.
Will the training center itself
need to have CEUs?
Have to have additional training every year or something like that?
No, that's for individual members. Yes?
Just to make sure the clarity on the part about the 50% of men teaching. Mm-hmm. So it is permissible for a woman to be able to teach that if she's a certified member, some of the content.
Right now.
Okay.
Can women be directors of the training center?
Yes, we have two that are right now. Yes?
It's maybe something of a membership question, but if we're kind of in the early phases, so the two-year run-up of starting to teach it. I'm a member, I'm teaching it. If people take that class,
they still would have to take 30 hours somewhere else for certification, mm-hmm. though.
Yeah, the grandfathering in would come into play when they're taking the training that you're submitting for evaluation for me. So I mean, you're 2 years out. That probably won't be the case for people that are maybe doing it right now with you, but maybe closer up time to when you're actually preparing to apply with us. Yeah. We can have a conversation about that. Okay. You know, we want to be fair. I mean, if it's fairly close and it's just a way to say thank you to those people that have done it, we want to be, this is the spirit of it that we want to be fair to, but we can't guarantee that we'll do that. Yeah, these are good questions. If you have membership questions, I can answer those too, but not as well as Emily, I'm sure. Any other training center questions that I can answer for you?
The advanced training, is that considered level 2 or level 3?
I'm sorry?
The advanced training.
Yeah, so that's just a general term that we use. Our centers, even fundamentals training, not all of our centers use that language. Faith Lafayette uses some like track 1. Right. So you can use whatever you, again, how you package it, how you design it, that can be up to you. That's fine. You just have to make sure that, and this is helpful for us, that when trainees do come to your center, you just help them understand, you know, track 1 at my center, that's fundamentals. You know, so they understand what they're doing in order to be certified. But yeah, what you call it is fine. You don't have to even, centers don't have to offer advanced training. But I think you should. I think it's a great way to establish long-lasting relationships with trainees. And especially if those get approved for CEUs, they're going to continue to come back to you. I would like to foster long-term relationships between trainees and our centers. And CEUs and advanced training is a great way to do that beyond certification. Yes?
So just to make sure I understand, when you have a supervising fellow, assuming the center doesn't have a supervising fellow,
yep,
on the staff, that supervising fellow is the one who is going to make sure that the center does not drift theologically, doctrinally, philosophically.
they're part of that process. Yes. So the big part of that's going to be your ecclesiastical authority. Like we part of the accounting for the annual report is, you know, when was the last time that you've reported to your elders? You know, are there any concerns here? We encourage the fellows to be involved as they want to be. And the directors as well. There's just kind of a communication between kind of me, the fellow, and the director. And there shouldn't be ever any need for any punitive action. Yeah, a lot of that's just to make sure that everything's good. And if you do, as a director, come across any issues, you go to your fellow first. Say, hey, I've got a question about this. This seems to be happening. I will give you an example. There was one of our centers, and it wasn't the fault of the center, but their church ended up drifting left, liberal, okay, if theologically. But the people at the center were holy where we were, and so we saw there was going to be a loss of ecclesiastical authority. This is where the fellow is vitally important. The director went to them and said, this is happening. It looks like they're going a different direction, and this is not going to work anymore. So what I come into play here, and the fellow comes into play here, we help. You know, we don't want to just say, okay, well, you lost your certification. Sorry. And we try to give them as much time as they need to find a new authority, if that's another church or another group. And so the whole goal is to keep them in compliance as best we can. And so fellows are a pretty important part of that process.
So, for example, if we do a major update to one of our courses, we're not required to submit those notes to our supervising.
I mean, I think it'd be wise to let them look at it, but they don't have to do any kind of formal approval. No. One thing I am instituting, I haven't started this yet because, you know, we've been busy. But we've had what I just explained to you, this entire renewal process, this is brand new to me being on staff. This never existed before. The renewal process went something like this. How are things going this year? It's going pretty good. All right, pay your dues. And I'm like, nah, we're not doing that. I want information. I want to know what's going on. So those days are over. I'm getting data. Our directors had no idea how many people were being trained in ACBC. For 40 years, no idea, not a clue. We know now. I gave you specific numbers because our directors are giving that information annually. So the renewal process is much more specific, but that's annual. What I'm hoping to do is a 5 to 6 year comprehensive review of every center, every 5 to 6 years. I still have to plan that out because it takes a lot of manpower to do that. That's when we would kind of take another comprehensive look at your curriculum. Hey, how are things going? Have there been any major changes? Where do you want to go in the next 5 years? It'd be kind of a semi-informal interview between me and the director, but I want to put eyes on curriculum again. There are some centers we've not looked at in 20, 30 years. So we need to do that again.
I know there could be a lot of variables, but would there be an average length of time, maybe if a church was ready to start? That's how long the process could take?
There are a lot of variables. I won't even try to answer that question. I'm sorry. Especially because the department is me. So, and it is the way it works is first come, first serve. So if you submit your application, I get to you first. And if I've got five people in front of you, just patience. May the Lord bless you with patience. So, but on average, I've gotten through them. I can get through, depending on if there's no one waiting in front of you, I can get through the whole process no longer than 3 months.
Okay.
If there are people in front of you, I've had up to 8 months. Mm-hmm. So it's still pretty quick, I guess. I don't know. I have nothing to judge it against.
It's 8 months to do what?
Submission of application to a vote from the board.
Oh, okay.
The whole process, yeah. And there was a time, oh man, it was crazy, this summer. Everyone decided we're gonna submit at the same time. I'm like, you guys are stressing me out. Because I will tell you, I'm pretty much offline from mid to late July to the end of this week because we're doing annual conference stuff. Now I say that like if I can get to it, I will. I mean, I don't want to leave people hanging, but people who are like, hey, I submitted in July and I want to be in front of the board by October. I'm like, it's nice to want, you know, I'm sorry. But oftentimes if it doesn't work out, January is a real possibility. January is the next board meeting and they meet quarterly. So, the whole object of this whole process is we're in constant communication. There'll never be a place where there'll be weeks and weeks that we're not talking if we're going along, unless I'm telling you something, we need something. So I try to make it to as transparent as possible. There shouldn't be any surprises on timeline. If I'm telling you, hey, you submit it, you got four people in front of you, just know it's going to take some time. Yeah. Thank you all. This was a lot of information. This is only the second time that we've done this at an annual conference. And the first year I had like two people. So this is great. I'm so grateful that you guys are here. I didn't bring my cards because I'm just not prepared. But actually, I may have a few, but I'd love to give you my card. I'm also on the website, S. Stephens, S-T-E-P-H-E-N-S. @biblicalcounseling.com. S. Stephens@biblicalcounseling.com. Email me and we can have some conversation. So thank you guys for your time and we'll let you go.
You're listening to a resource from the Association of Certified Biblical Counselors, where we seek to promote excellence in biblical counseling. For more resources or to find out more information about ACBC, please visit us at biblicalcounseling.com.